Hey everyone, welcome to Just Mental Health with Steph and Em, the podcast where we discuss mental health issues from a social justice lens. I'm Emily.
And I'm Stephanie. A quick disclaimer before we get started, we are mental health professionals, but this is not to be taken as professional advice.
We are also aware that our privilege may cloud our perspective on some topics, and we not only welcome but encourage you to message us with criticism and corrections. Let's get started. So, super quick update from last week. I got my cat. Her name's Diva.
Congratulations.
She's on my bed right now. It's going really well. I just got her yesterday. But anyway, our business of the week is called Queen of Cups Photography. The owner is Savannah Barnett, and she is Stephanie's cousin. And she is a photographer based in Lexington. She does portraits, weddings, events, boudoir, products and pets. I've seen Stephanie's wedding pictures. They're really beautiful. And I'm looking at her Instagram right now and they're like really beautiful photos.
Yeah, she's talented.
Yeah, so it looks like she has an Instagram page, Queen of Cups Photo, and a website, queenofcupsphotography.com. So there you go.
Great, cool. And I'm excited today. We have another guest. We have Lindsay Carney with us. She is an LCSW. She practices in Kentucky.
Licensed clinical social worker, for those of you who don't remember from
what hopefully they remember the podcast. She is the therapist and co-founder of Transcend Counseling Services, which is located in Louisville, Kentucky. She specializes in helping individuals heal their relationship with their bodies, food, and movement. She's an advocate for health at every size, anti-dieting, and intuitive eating. And you can follow Transcend Counseling on Facebook. Lindsay, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I am really excited to be with you guys.
We're excited to have you.
Yeah, this is going to be great. So like we had kind of talked about before we started recording was that I was really interested in this sort of movement, this new way of looking at health and nutrition. And it's kind of part of the body positivity movement, but it's even more so than that, right? Because it really covers, it's not just about loving your body, but it's also about that you can be healthy and you can look at health in a different way. That's just sort of my take on it. Can you kind of explain more about what it all is and what it means?
Certainly, yes. So Health at Every Size is a movement or organization that is helping to kind of uncover some of the misconceptions surrounding health and weight. And so one of the biggest ways they're doing that is like unhooking the idea and concept of health from size and weight. Because for generations now, we have been conditioned to believe that thinner equals healthier, or sometimes even beyond that, thinner equals better. So the Health at Every Size movement and the anti-diet movement is really about uncovering and shedding light on what health actually is and allowing it to become something that's more individualized for each person and each body, because each body is designed very differently and uniquely. Everyone's health can look different.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it really puts the focus on the individual's health separate from their BMI or their weight or their size or anything like that, which is often still, in the medical community and profession still considered one of the most important things. I mean, every time you go to the doctor, they weigh you.
Right.
Whether you want them to or not, I've asked not to, but they do it anyways. So, because to them, that's like, okay, we got to keep track of your BMI and make sure that you're healthy, as if that is sort of the most important issue.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up the BMI, because in the past couple of years, I've been doing a lot of learning and researching, and I'm not very good at like quoting people or articles, you know, things like that. But I do know that there is literature out there that speaks about the BMI, how it was created, what it was created for. And if my memory serves me right, the BMI was created for insurance companies because they needed a very measurable way to determine if someone was going to be a risk based on their weight. And so it has since then become a very, according to the medical field, a very indicative form of measuring and determining. What we've realized over time is that it's not very helpful at all. It's not a very sound, measurable tool for, you know, showing if someone is healthy or not.
As far as what I know of BMI, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know a ton about it either, but it also has some like a racist history, right? Like it's just kind of goes by the probably male, probably the average white male, quote, healthy, you know, and it doesn't take into account female, it doesn't take into account people of other races and cultures that, you know, body types, you know, might be different.
Yeah, genetics too is another one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because BMI is only your height and your weight, and that's the only thing that the only two things that they use to calculate that. And it does not take into consideration a lot of other things like age, ethnicity, you know, race, genetics, muscle mass, body fat percentage, any of that. So it's not even, you know, very accurate. It just tells you what your height is for your weight. And
even like body proportions, like if you're a really like thin woman with big boobs, you're going to have a high BMI, even if you're thin, you know, like they don't take into consideration those sorts of things either.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. And it's weird how in medicine, there's still just a lot of stuff that is taken as fact, even when it's not an indicator of anything. And BMI is one of those things. But yeah, so we know that BMI is not an accurate way to measure someone's health, you know, but what about, this is a thing that, you know, I always kind of like question with myself when I'm, you know, trying to think about, okay, health, you know, size is not an indication of health. What about like how they say, you know, if you are overweight, you're at a higher risk of certain diseases and illnesses.
Yeah, and I think that is where it gets really tricky, because there may be instances in which someone's higher weight is going to place them in the higher risk category for certain illnesses. However, we know that when you start talking about health and you start talking about weight loss, that, and maybe we can get into this later, but like when you start talking about losing weight for your health, it kind of sets people up for this very rigid and unhealthy relationship to food and eating and even exercising. So that's kind of the whole beast that is diet culture and dieting, is that diet culture is dependent on us wanting to lose weight and wanting to keep the weight off. And yet when we try to micromanage our health in that way by, you know, over restricting or by over exercising, we are trying to manipulate our bodies to do something that maybe they're not designed to do. And then that frustration and that, that battle, that losing battle, creates a lot of stress. It creates a lot of self-inflicted guilt. And those things can be so much more poisonous to our health than allowing our body to be at whatever weight it is. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if that kind of got off to one tangent. I tend to do that sometimes, but that is one of the really toxic things about diet culture. Mm-hmm. Is that it kind of thrives on dieting not being successful for people. And yet we're still kind of like sucked back into it because we are fed this information that losing weight is what makes us healthy.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now this capitalistic society we live in that profits off of, it's like they just created this image just for the sake of profit and, you know, feeding you these lies like, oh, this diet is, first lie, healthy for you. Second lie, is going to work. And we buy into it. Yes. And then, you know, maybe you do lose weight temporarily, but is it in a healthy way? And is it in a sustainable way? And it's not usually in a sustainable way. Then, you know, you gain it back. And I've heard that, you know, that impact on your mental health, but also that the yo-yo dieting, mm-hmm. like that's the worst for your health. Like if you were to be, quote, overweight and sustain that weight versus go back and forth, it's less healthy for you to do the back and forth. Is that?
Yeah, definitely. Yes. Yeah. Because your body kind of has like a response system to certain behaviors like restriction and starvation or like the intermittent fasting that I know is also really popular right now. Your body almost kind of goes into shock whenever you engage in such a rigid diet, that it sort of starts to try and like hyper conserve all of its resources and nutrients, especially when you like are doing something so restrictive that you're dropping weight really, really fast, your body is not going to respond well to that. And it can be more detrimental to your overall health and longevity, putting your body in that kind of stress, you know, that up and down weight, constant, you know, extreme fluctuations in weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it thinks it's like, okay, we're going into a starvation period.
Exactly.
And, you know, as humans, we've developed the ability to hold on to fat for those starvation periods. So by constantly making your body think it's going into starvation, it's just adapting to hold on to more.
Yes.
Because it's like, well, obviously you're not good at feeding yourself. So I've got to be prepared for that. And when you talk about, you know, the mental health part of it, the toll it takes, it seems similar, that sort of cycle of the, you know, restrict or abstinence from something, the relapsing on with the behavior, the food, and then the guilt, the shame, and then sort of the binging. I mean, that's very similar to substance abuse as well. And so that's sort of, you know, the behavior and the cycle that people can get into. And that can, you know, obviously it can cause a lot of eating disorders or make eating disorders much worse, with the physical and the mental strain that it puts on you.
Right. Yeah. It makes me think of, like you mentioned, like the binge eating disorder, and even just like general preoccupation with food and how much damage that can do to your mental and emotional functioning. And, you know, it makes me think of the image that I use a lot with my clients, when they're trying to learn this idea of, practicing unconditional permission around food, which is one of the principles of intuitive eating, which maybe we can get into that later. But, this unconditional permission around food is actually what can help people heal their relationship to food. Because unconditional permission says that all foods are nourishing, all foods are permissible. And so when you start to kind of eliminate these rules and restrictions and labels, and when I say labels, I mean like emotionally charged labels, like good, bad, healthy, unhealthy. When you start to remove those things and just see food, all food as just food, and it's very neutral, it's very permissible, then food no longer holds this power of like, you know, that healthy eating lifestyle is going to make me good. It's going to make me healthy. It's going to make me thinner. And it frees up so much space in your life and in your mind when you can practice that unconditional permission. I kind of got on a tangent, but one of the images that I use with clients a lot is like the image of a bow and arrow. When you pull back that bow, the tighter you pull back and the further you pull back, the more tension there is in that bow. And then when you let go, the further that arrow is going to go, right? So the comparison there is, the parallel is, the more you're restricting is kind of that, the further away you're trying to get from like those trigger foods or those bad foods, as people say, the more you try to avoid and restrict, the stronger that urge becomes to then indulge in that food. And so the arrow going really far because of how much tension there was in that bow, that is the binge cycle. So when you can neutralize food and invite all of it as permissible in your life, you're eliminating that tension in your mind, and in your emotional state. And that is what will begin to help kind of level out and heal that relationship with food and make it less, less of a stressor, less of a trigger.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it becomes like those labels, like it becomes like a chore, like eating vegetables, for example, is like, ugh, I have to like eat this healthy food now. And then it's like, and then it's like, ooh, I'm going to reward myself with some ice cream. Or like, I talk about ice cream like every episode, don't I? But like, if you sort of, I mean, if you guys don't care if I share a little bit of personal,
please,
recently, because yeah. I was, you know, I found myself starting to see food in that way as like, this food is bad for you and this food is good for you. And I would let myself eat the quote bad food. But I would always just feel like, just not good about it. And then I would be like, okay, I'm going to get back on track and eat. And it wasn't always necessarily for weight. It was just like for what I thought was healthy. Like, okay, I'm going to get back on track. And then just like the pressure of like trying to keep up with it just caused me more stress than just like chilling. So then I just sort of stopped worrying so much. And I'm finding that I'm actually like, like if I you know, I think about it and I'll be like, okay, I haven't been eating, like I didn't eat any vegetables today. I should probably eat some vegetables. That'd be good for me. Or like, I haven't had a lot of protein today. I should probably eat protein, but it's not like, OMG, I have, you know, it was just a more like, and it just, I feel like I'm eating better since I've stopped thinking about it so much. I think that's kind of the, is that kind of the, what you're saying?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, cause so what you're kind of describing is this approach that is more about like listening to your body and being tuned in to what it needs, which includes nourishment and thinking about what kind of nutrients our body needs, but that, but it also includes like cravings and things that taste good or things that feel good when we eat them. So when you are noticing that you're wanting a certain food or a certain food group or kind of food, when you, so let's talk about first, like when you try to avoid or like push it off. So like, let's say I want a McFlurry from McDonald's. I am going to kind of obsess over that in my head and be like, no, that's really bad. Like maybe I didn't exercise this morning and there's so many calories, blah, blah, blah. You know, and you kind of like talk yourself out of it. So then you go through the rest of your day and you're like, okay, I really wanted that thing and I didn't get it. So then you start, so then I would start to like try to fill that need with other things. Like, okay, I'm going to go home and eat like some Greek yogurt with some honey in it and see if that like satisfies my sweet tooth. And then, you know, I eat that and then I'm like, oh, that didn't really do it for me. So then I'm still thinking about like this McFlurry that I really wanted. And you just keep thinking about it and like obsessing over it. And what happens is you're going to obsess over it until you get it. So then let's say you get it, but you've already kind of indulged other cravings and things along the way because you're trying to satisfy that one craving that you were trying to ignore. And then you end up overeating or overindulging because you didn't listen to your craving in the first place. Does that make sense? So
I am so, I feel like you're talking about me. Like, yeah. It's just so me. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then, so not only are you like trying to satisfy this craving in different ways, you're also creating like a lot of stress, a lot of emotional distress around this issue. Whereas if you would have just said, okay, I want a McFlurry, I'm going to stop and get a small one. And then you eat it and you move on. Then it's done. And you eliminate all that stress and all that preoccupation and all that guilt. You eliminate all that extra like eating, trying to find things that are going to satisfy that craving. And that's where like true food peace really starts to begin, is when you can listen to what your body wants and honor what it is that it wants. Now, hopefully I'm not talking too much, but one of the things that that kind of, rolls into, so to speak, is people that then think, oh, well, if I just eat whatever I want all the time, like I would be 300 pounds or I would not eat a vegetable ever. Well, you know, that kind of mindset makes sense, right? We think that if we allow ourselves the things that we want all the time, that we're going to always want those things. And maybe that happens in the beginning when you're first trying this like unconditional permission around food and honoring your hunger and your cravings. You may find that you're eating a lot of those things in the beginning because your body has been, you know, you've been restricting those things for so long. You've been withholding those things from your body. So yeah, initially, like for maybe like the first couple, 3 weeks or whatever, you're going to find that you're going to want those things a lot. But then over time, if you're listening to your body, you're going to know when you want something else and you are going to want something else. You're not always going to want donuts in the morning just because you're allowing yourself to eat donuts. Over time, you will find that, yeah, sometimes you want a donut and that's okay. But then other times you want like an omelet with like vegetables and stuff in it or whatever. So your body is designed to communicate with you in various ways of what it wants and what it needs. And it's just about tuning in and listening to that.
So interesting.
Yeah. So that's really like what the core of intuitive eating is that your body knows what it needs. And it will eventually, you know, like once you get the sort of the freedom, like, you know, kid in a candy store, sort of like, I can eat whatever I want. And then after a certain point, it's like, because you can eat it, there's no restriction on it. The sort of like holding it up as like, oh my gosh, this is the best thing in the world kind of goes away. And the obsession goes away. And the craving is not as strong. Because, you know, when you tell someone that you can't have something, well, now that's what they want. And that's all they can think about. So when you just sort of take that out of the picture, then it's okay. It's not a big deal. So like, there's no reason to obsess over it.
Yeah, exactly. I attended a training recently where they talked about that specific issue. And the trainer used a metaphor of like, if you were told your water was going to be shut off in 24 hours, you would only be concerned and thinking about the water that you're not going to have the next day. And you would be preparing your entire life for having no water. You would be going to the store and getting bottled water. You would be storing it up, whatever, so that you're prepared for not having it. And that's exactly what happens. And
yes.
And it does happen. I mean, people are like, I'm starting my diet Monday, so I've got to, you know, get all this extra goodness in before my diet starts, because I'm not gonna be able to have it when the diet starts. Or even like kind of the same thing when they're doing a diet and then they're like, oh, I'm gonna have a cheat day. I'm gonna like go diet free today and just like eat what I want. It's so hard on our bodies and so hard on our mental, emotional health.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I feel like it's sort of like what you're describing is just kind of deciding overall, I'm going to live a healthy lifestyle. And once you have accepted that, I'm making sure I'm understanding. Your body will tell you what you need. Like if you just, like what you said, like some people might be hearing this thinking, well, you can't just go eat whatever you want, whenever you want. But once you give yourself that permission, you're not going to want it as much. And your body is going to tell you, okay, let's eat some vegetables. Let's eat some protein. Let's get some vitamin. Like eventually your body is going to give you those cues, and it kind of like doesn't hold any food like above another. Is that, am I understanding? Yeah. Huh.
Absolutely. Yeah. Another way to put it is like you're removing all the external factors and rules that are imposed on us, which is diet culture, right? So you're kind of removing all of those external factors when you're deciding what you want to eat, and you're only listening to what it is that you think your body needs or wants.
Right. One way I've heard it put is, you know, when you're thinking about what to eat, think about what's going to nourish me. Mm-hmm. And instead of, you know, what is healthy or what is good for me, what is nourishing me in this moment? And it's really an act of kindness towards yourself to choose foods that are good for you and nourishing for you. And so I think by taking away the shame, which shame is probably one of the worst things for someone's mental health ever. So when you take away that shame and that guilt, then you want to actually start treating yourself better because you feel like you deserve it. And you want to love yourself more and be healthy because you love yourself, not because you want to be a certain size or a certain weight. And health in that, be as healthy as you can be. Obviously, like people have chronic illnesses and people get sick, and it's not a, if you're healthy, that's good. And if you're sick, then you have failed in some way. It's just doing what you can to be as healthy as you can be. And that's going to look different for every person.
Yes, exactly. And health is so much more than just like a transaction of what you're putting in and what you're burning off, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another concept within diet culture that is really toxic and not helpful, is there's so much more to health than what we're eating and how we're moving. So I think that also is very, you know, important to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking how we've just been fed this information since childhood. Like, I remember in third grade, the food pyramid, like,
yeah,
11 grains and 2 to 4 fruit servings of fruit and 3 to 5 servings of vegetables. And it's like, they're teaching us from when we are children to count out our servings. And like, these are the exact numbers of what you should eat in order to be healthy. I mean, it's that ingrained. I think that they've shifted that a little bit as far as what I know from what they're teaching kids in school now. But, you know, when we were in school, that was what was taught, and that's what was healthy. Like, that was, no one batted an eye. It wasn't seen as a problem, because no one was thinking about the mental health impacts of framing it that way. And the physical health, I mean, I'm thinking of, I posted something on Facebook recently about Lizzo and how she's a fat woman, and she does like 3-hour long concerts where she's like dancing around playing the flute. Mm-hmm. And I was a flute player in high school, and that takes a lot of your air. Like, yeah. And she's just like, has so much endurance, and she's very clearly physically healthy. She's very clearly mentally healthy, because she doesn't give a fuck what anyone thinks about her. And she dresses how she wants, and she sings about what she wants, and she talks about herself and others and body image in general the way she wants. And so then for someone to say, oh, being fat makes you unhealthy, she's just a perfect example of how it's so not true. Or being fat means that you feel bad about yourself. That's also not true. I saw that thing you posted, Stephanie. There was a fat woman who went to a club with 2 thin friends. Mm-hmm. And
like, she got hit on.
Yeah.
And then one of the,
yeah, you can tell it.
it was a TikTok, and she was telling this story, and one of the girls that was with her was sort of like in shock that she kept getting hit on, and her response was like, I'm fat, I'm not ugly. Like, you know, like, it doesn't,
I love that.
That is not a beauty, you know, being thin is not a beauty standard, or it shouldn't be, because you can be all different sizes. Your body can look so many different ways, and you can, and you're still beautiful. And Lizzo, yeah, Lizzo's gorgeous. And I follow her TikToks, and if anyone does use TikTok, you should follow Lizzo, because not only is she super positive about that sort of stuff, but like, she's vegan. I'm not vegan, but she posts like her recipes and like the cooking that she does. And so sometimes I've gotten ideas of like, wow, that looks really good. I never would have thought of eating that. And she's just real positive about the whole thing. Like, you know, like, when she's cooking, it's like, or she's making food, it's like, this is going to be really tasty. And this is going to, this is going to feel really good to eat. And I'm going to be in a better mood because of it. And, which really, I mean, that is, not only do you eat to survive, but eating plays a big impact in our mood. If you ever skip a meal or are hungry and you get grumpy, that's pretty normal. So you can't concentrate if you're not eating enough. You can't, your cognition, you know, starts to fail or falter when you're not eating enough. So there's so many important reasons why we need to eat, other than just taking in the calories so we can live.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
I'm going to share something personal too, but I really don't care if anyone knows it. So because we're in 2021 now. Oh my gosh. It started in 2019 that I started getting into more of like body acceptance and like intuitive eating. And then sort of like during the whole shutdown of 2020, I was like, well, you know what? This is going to be the time for me to really focus on that and change my relationship with food. I never had a bad relationship with food or any eating issues until I went to college. And then my mental health like plummeted. It was horrible my first semester of college. It was like everything. And again, that's pretty typical. Unfortunately, anyone who's getting ready to go to college, prepare yourself, because it's pretty normal that your mental health issues will act up or things will pop up at that time that you've never had to worry about. And so along with mental health issues, an eating disorder came. And I had been struggling with that eating disorder, well, up until last year. And through finding sort of this new way of looking at food and challenging my relationship with it and my relationship with my body, I have not engaged in any purging, binging, restricting behaviors in over a year. So I'm very happy about that, because that desire is gone, because I literally took all the rules off the table. And when there's no rules, then there's no way to break rules, and there's no way to feel bad about breaking those rules. And I did notice that increase of like, I'm going to eat whatever I want. That lasted about maybe 2 weeks. And then I was like, I don't feel so good. I'm going to change how I eat. And now it's balanced out. I feel like if I want dessert, I have dessert. If I don't, I don't. It'll be there, you know, whenever I want it. But yeah, so I just wanted to share that. Like, if anyone is struggling with their relationship with food or with an eating disorder, you know, you can get in recovery for that. And this may be the way to do it for you. This may not, but the important thing is that you get the help that you need and you talk to somebody. And there are therapists out there that specialize in that, that can help you.
That's so awesome. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, that's incredible. And I as well appreciate you being honest and open about that.
Yeah, I think it's important that, like,
you said this, Lindsay.
What?
Oh, I was sorry. I was going back to something that was said earlier.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say, I think it's important that, you know, if I'm going to say like I'm a mental health advocate, then I should be that. And I don't have any problem talking about mental health issues, because I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. You know, I don't think that it's shameful or it should be taboo or anything. And like, if I'm telling my clients that, you know, it's okay to share this stuff with me, like, I'm not going to judge you, you know, as their therapist, like, I need to be authentic in that way. But also, you know, if you have a platform like this and you're going to talk about mental health issues, you know, it's probably good to just let, with what you feel comfortable. Everyone is, you know, only asked to share what they feel comfortable with when they come on the show, but to be transparent about that. And like, mental health professionals have mental health issues too. And, you know, we struggle with stuff too. And a lot of time that's the reason why people go into this profession, is because they have their own issues. So if you worry that your therapist may not understand or may judge you or may not get it, they probably do to some extent. And they may not disclose to you what their issues are, but statistically they have something going on, whether it's trauma or a mental health issue or both. And they can kind of relate in that way.
Yeah, I don't think I know a single mental health professional that doesn't have some sort of mental health issue. I don't think I know a single human that doesn't have a mental health issue. It's just that mental health professionals are usually more aware and have identified and possibly started to
hopefully are working on it. Yeah.
Right. But taking even their own advice. Like, we're trained to be empathetic. So, you know, even if you, and they all overlap, like all the mental health issues overlap in some way. Like even if someone hasn't struggled with their relationship with food, they've struggled with their relationship with something else. And there's parallels. So right. I definitely agree with you opening to the door to talk about these things.
Yeah, the human emotions are the same. So it doesn't so much matter the behavior, but, you know, if we've probably all experienced shame, we've all experienced guilt, and we've all experienced heartache. And so all of those are the same. And so if you can connect with people on those emotions, you can empathize with them. Mm-hmm. So Lindsay, if people wanted to get resources, find out more information, they just want to know more about this new way of thinking and start their journey on changing their relationship with their body and food, what do you suggest? Like, where do you suggest they start?
That's a good question. Well, I won't go in too much detail, but I started my own journey a few years, well, probably 2 years ago now. And honestly, I feel like I gained a lot of my awareness and knowledge of these things through social media platforms. There's a lot of content creators and leaders in this movement on Instagram. There's a lot of resources even on like Pinterest. There's a website, of course, for like Health at Every Size and Intuitive Eating. And if you visit any of those websites, there should be resources available as far as like, if you wanted to get connected with a practitioner or a clinician in your area who is like certified in intuitive eating or, is an advocate with Health at Every Size. So those would be maybe some good starting points. Let's see, I'll mention too, if anyone is interested, I have a group on Facebook, that is called Louisville Anti-Diet Project. It is obviously a Louisville, group, but there are individuals that have joined that are not in Louisville, and that's totally fine. I don't, exclude other folks, that don't live in the area, but that's a really good community just for kind of, getting a basic understanding of what anti-diet is and just learning more about, you know, strategies and techniques for healing your, relationship to food and movement and your body. So those would be some other options. And yeah, if, you know, you shared my page on Facebook, Transcend Counseling Services, I personally can be found there if anybody wants to reach out to me. And then I'm kind of connected with like other professionals in the area too. And, you know, ranging from therapists to dietitians. So yeah.
Great. Thank you. Yeah. And those are all really good places to start. Especially that I'm in that group as well. And, people post all the time, great resources and links and articles to read. So if you just don't know where to start, it's probably good to join an online community, and just kind of, you know, lurk and view and see what people put, and then it'll put you in the right direction, usually. So thank you so much for being here today and talking about this. It was very educational and enlightening. And I think that this is gonna speak to a lot of people, because I don't really know anyone that doesn't have a weird relationship with food or their body. That's sort of the culture that we're in right now, or that hasn't been impacted in some way by, you know, diet culture. So hopefully this is really helpful to a lot of people.
Thank you so much. I am so excited to share about this, and this was really fun.
Yeah, this was great.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this conversation. I think it was super interesting and super important and super relatable to a lot of people. I think a lot of people are going to have an ability to relate to this episode. So thank you so much. Well, that's our show. If you enjoyed this episode, please share with friends and family.
And don't forget to follow the show's Instagram for updates on new episodes at Just Mental Health Podcast. And that is with a period between each word. We record a new episode every week. This is Steph.
And M. Do you want to say your name?
Oh, and Lindsay.
Signing off. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.